This episode of the Fair Game Podcast is brought to you by the Fair Game Golf app. It's like having a clubhouse and a scorecard on your phone. Connect with golfers across the globe, find people to play with, and track your rounds all in one place. If you want to show off that new putter or flex that you're about to play a top 100 course, you can do that too. It's like any other social media app, but just for golf. Best of all, it's 100% free. Head to the Apple or Google Play stores and check it out. Fair Game, the app for golfers. So where are you guys, first of all, welcome to the podcast. Where are you guys calling in from? Raymond, you're in Oregon, right?
Correct.
Got it. And then Ube, aka Patrick Marcel, which we'll talk about in a second, you're in California.
Yeah, California.
Cool. All right. So a little West Coast, East Coast action. Now, let's talk about Patrick. So it's so funny because Instagram is the weirdest thing where you think someone's handle is their name. And I was like, oh yeah, Ube. So is Ube your name? Is Patrick your name? Tell us what's that situation. Let's start there.
Yeah, it was actually kind of like a nickname that stuck. So when I kind of came back to golf and into the space and really just kind of being creative, and kind of, we're going to probably talk about that later. But wanted to give a nod to like heritage and kind of where I'm from, like the Philippines, right? So Ube is like this kind of this dessert that kind of lives in that culture. And I thought it just kind of would be cool as a kind of a social handle name, right? Just because you don't kind of put your first name, last name. It's not like a Gmail thing. So we started there and we started shooting events and kind of getting and making connections kind of in the space. And it was kind of a name that stuck where people would just call me that. So I kind of just rolled with it and kind of fast forward a couple of years down the line and just, yeah, it's kind of a name that just kind of, so nickname that just stuck. And yeah, that's kind of here we are now. So I think you make a great point, like in this world now with kind of just social currency, it's how we know people with like through social handles. And especially when kind of the world was shut down, that's kind of how everyone interacted kind of for the most part, right? Because we couldn't really go outside. So I think in terms of like timing and kind of the way we communicate now is a culture kind of through phone and sometimes less in person. It's kind of a funny thing that stuck. And now kind of when we're kind of going out, that's kind of the name that kind of resonates a little bit more. So it's also nice not to use the government name.
Yeah, the government, they do love to name us those names. Now, okay, so just because I've never had this said dessert, so it's a dessert. Can you tell us what's in the Ube dessert?
It's purple. It's kind of like a sweet vanilla toffee-ish kind of combination. My favorite form of it is like an ice cream, but there's different forms like in bread and kind of sweet cookie type desserts. But yeah, I think in terms of like kind of color being recognizable, it's in purple. But yeah, you definitely have to one, a try, and then two, I would just send you or mail you some. I think it has enough preservatives to last a few hour flight out in your direction.
Interesting. Yeah, I just googled it. I mean, I just put in Ube dessert, and there's an entire page of beautiful purple things. This is amazing. So, okay. So basically when you pull up to the golf course, people are like, yo, it's Ube. Yo, what's good? That's what people say.
Yeah. That's kind of where it's at so far. So We're just going to ride with it.
Look, I'm not mad at that at all. I think it's a great name. Nicknames are good. My name is not Andrew. Well, technically my name is Andrew, but my name is not Andrew. Andrew is my middle name, actually. My first name is Clifton.
Ooh.
Right. But it's not by choice. My parents named me. They named me Clifton Andrew Haynes, and they decided, I don't know when. I actually need to ask my mom this. Like, when did you decide to not call me by my first name? Because I'm sure it happened at some point. They're like, you know what? And I didn't make this decision. I've been Andrew my entire life. So I'm kind of like a nickname, I guess. I don't go by my government name. So anyway.
Interesting.
And then we've got Golf Projects, a.k.a. Raymond. So, you know, a lot of aliases on the podcast today.
I like to keep it discreet.
Yeah, got to keep it low key. So first and foremost, just in case some of us don't know us or only know us by our Instagram handles, I'll circle back to you, Patrick, a.k.a. Ube, and just tell our listeners a little bit about you, who you are, just kind of like high level what you do, and then we'll get into a little bit deeper.
For sure. Yeah, so I'm a cinematographer here in the golf space based out of Southern California. And kind of really the vibe is just trying to tell stories in golf to help elevate the game. I think we all talk about growing and inspiring the game. And I think the medium that I choose is kind of through a camera lens and being able to shine certain stories on individuals or parts of the game that kind of help elevate and tell the larger story of just someone or something hitting the golf ball. So yeah, I kind of use it as a muse for one, self-expression, and two, just to show a reflection of how I feel about the game through the lens that I see and the people that I meet.
Nice. Now, question, did you start shooting, and then we can talk about when you started playing golf, because I'm always fascinated about especially the creative class and people that get into the game of golf and, you know, design or do photography or do video. And I always like to find out at least what you did before you decided to start shooting golf. Did you go to school for cinematography? Is it something you picked up along the way? Like when did you kind of like, you know, start to get into that?
Yeah. So creatively, it was photography first, right? Just kind of being able to capture the stills in motion, really did that as a hobby. I played golf when I was younger, stopped playing and then came back to the game. But in terms of kind of school and in that kind of arena, YouTube University is a very great class. They are an open source program where you're pretty much able to learn anything. So when I really made the decision to really kind of dive deeper into the creative world, learning one through that platform, but then two, again, the people that you meet, the creatives and understanding kind of their stories and being able to craft something technically that made sense from like a picture video perspective. And then two, just how do you kind of put your own take on it through story based on your own personal experience, which everyone's different. So making that jump and kind of matching those two different worlds of being creative and playing golf and trying to make essentially at work to kind of echo what you want to create as art to kind of a larger audience. And in any case, if no one is watching, at least when you watch it and go through the edits and that whole process, it's the question is, are you happy with that final project or process? And kind of that's been the reflection, trying to see through the creative lens and kind of hitting that post button or just kind of saying that piece is final.
For sure. That's so important. I actually saw a post when you were talking. It reminded me of something I saw late last night. I was just scrolling through Instagram. And, you know, Gary Vaynerchuk, you know, mega business mogul, super smart guy. Kind of crazy, but I mean, the guy is smart, right? All smart people are kind of crazy, which I think you have to love. But I saw a post and he was basically saying that, and I don't know if it was him or maybe someone did a repost, but he had this idea of stop posting things for likes, like stop putting things out there that you don't believe in that aren't a representation of you. And I was like, yeah, like that's super right. And I've had some interesting conversations with people about this in a myriad of ways, but this concept of the currency of the digital like and what it actually means and what it's what the actual transaction capabilities are. At least from my perspective, it's so much lower than people realize out of like this quick little dopamine hit. But to your point of like doing things that may or may not get a million likes or a million views, does that matter versus doing things that are this representation of you and how you see the world? And that's why I love your feed, because you bring this really artful eye to golf, which I think that, you know, the space is, you know, for a game that claims to be as elevated as it is, right, and premium and whatnot, right, you know, take or leave it if you align with that perspective. But a game that is so quick to like roast a dude if his shirt's untucked, and yet half of the content that we see out there is like trash and just like unconsidered. I always find it interesting. So anyways, what do you guys think?
No, I mean, for me, I think it's also important too to understand like how you refine your craft. You can only do that by like the output. If you're stuck in this world of like constantly trying to make little updates and add little additions as opposed to like just posting and going, Like there's something to be said around like the importance of just getting whatever said ideas out there and allow them to blossom. I don't know. I think just like the brand side of me of being in like the professional side, like you've always had to relate back to a metric, something that's trackable, as opposed to like the importance of what it is to actually build something. And then, like I said, go back to like, are you refining your craft? Are you getting better beyond just the measurables? Are you enjoying like the process of what you're doing? I think that's really important. I think that's why, for me specifically, I'm a big fan of what Ube's been doing. We've lived in like this weird little highlight era, in a sense of like product launches and storytelling, like these quick cut snippet, 30 seconds, sound design, color grading, like over, like just too much. Whereas people have lost a little bit of the art of the actual substance. And so just as like a, I guess as another creative, like in the industry, I've come to like really respect the intentionality behind like what Ube has done over the last year, 2 years.
Yeah, I agree. It's super dope.
Thanks. Yeah, I agree. You're right. Like we just want that quick hit. We want the highlight. We want the good piece, right? But I think we circle back to golf. It's, you hit 1,000 balls and you still shank one on the golf course, right? You play for however long and you're still going to miss a shot.
Right.
Parts of those just don't get highlighted as much. And it creates a very like relatable and human element to it where, yeah, like it actually happened. It happens to everyone, regardless of its golf or life things. And I think being able to shine a better light on that and kind of call it what it is for what it is, which Raymond, I enjoy watching your pieces as well, because you kind of give the black and white to it, right? Like what is the thing? And then you offer this take that kind of gives this tinge of color of whether good or bad, at least it offers a different perspective of like, hey, I like it, or no, I don't like it. Like what's the larger vision and how does it add to the bigger puzzle?
For sure. Yeah, that's actually the perfect segue. So Raymond, AKA Golf Projects, you have not introduced yourself. So tell the listeners a little bit about you and what you do, just in case they don't follow you yet.
No, so the government name is definitely Raymond. I actually had the nickname Situation 2 growing up. I'm a junior. So my entire like younger life was always RJ. So from that, it stemmed also Arj. So getting a little bit older, I've like readopted the Raymond name. But yeah, Golf Projects, I've been in brand and marketing for like just a little over 10 years now. So played college football. Been in and around sport my entire life, even on the professional side of stuff. So the Golf Projects handle really just came up as an extension of like the conversations that I was having and what I've said is like the group chat, and then on the course conversations too, of just like what people are really interested in from a brand perspective, and then also products that are just coming to life in golf specifically. So getting a lot of questions around footwear and apparel. So just taking a lot of that energy and putting it into a creative space. I'm somebody who just likes to make things. So that's kind of like the historical context of what Golf Projects is. It's just a place to kind of somewhat discover what's happening on the brand side of things, but then also from a product lens of like what's dropping, what's hot, what are people talking about, what are people interested in. Yeah, I mean, that's somewhat of like the elevator pitch of what's been popping over the last year.
Dope. Cool. No, I would. I want to unpack that a little bit because I have a lot of thoughts about what you do versus what the rest of the golf industry does. But we'll save that for the back half of the podcast. But before we get into that, I don't know. Are there anything? I mean, I obviously want to talk about Sunday Red with both of you guys. But is there anything in the world of golf that is, you know, has you interested? Things that you're absorbing, looking at, et cetera, in the world of golf, and then we'll talk about some like off the course stuff. What are you guys looking at right now?
I think for me, I'm really interested in what's happening with media. Traditional media and like golf broadcasting has been very archaic for a really long time. So like creatives, like a Ube coming in, having more intentionality and storytelling around an abundance of different topics. And then like what Jacques Cousteau is doing with the PGA Tour and the Golf Channel and like some of his segments and stuff. I think like it's been a long time coming, but the fact that like people are really interested in something new, new means of media, new output is something that I think is, again, long overdue. And I'm really like excited about what is to come over this next, specifically this year, and how it all unfolds.
For sure. I just saw Jacques posted that thing last night where he's going to be the, I guess, the speaker on a new kind of like series, or is it a show or is it a series? I didn't read it too much, but he's going to be on the Golf Channel, which is dope.
Mm-hmm. So his first series was last week. And then this upcoming, I think it launches today, is this the second episode, if I'm not wrong. But yeah, stuff like that, where it's just like, hey, let's just get some new faces in, new energy. Let's talk about some new topics. And just go from there and, like, again, adapt and evolve to a level where, again, the sport is growing. Like, let's serve those new users, those new fans, a different perspective.
For sure. He's super dope. What about you, Patrick? What are you into in golf right now?
Yeah, I think one is just, yeah, like you touched on, just the representation, right? I think when, I guess, I grew up watching golf, the lens was very different than it is now. And I think having those, like a Jacques, like a Roger Steele, Will Lowry, the folks with different perspectives, not only of golf, but also of life. And how do they see the game, and how does that attract others in the new game? I think when you take it outside of the lens of golf, it's like, if you see an ad, like, do you see yourself in it? And do you see yourself wanting a part of that? And I think for golf to grow and to be a sport that is greater than it is now, I think we need to kind of attack that and kind of dive deeper into that, because there are those individuals that can add to the game through their own lens and continue to show that. I guess also on the course, the whole tour versus tour drama has become very interesting. I think we rewind back a year or so ago, everyone had their specific stance on it. They put their stake in the ground. And then now the chaos is maybe a little bit less. Obviously, they're still interjecting opinions, but I think just seeing how all that played out from how it happened in the beginning, I think that's become interesting for the game itself, not just because of money and where they're playing, but just what does it mean to the greater game when we look back at it 30, 40 years from now? Like, is it a blip, or did something actually happen from it?
Right. It's an interesting point of view. I think, I don't know, time will tell. Maybe it's a blip. I think, you know, the league versus league stuff is really interesting. The part that I always find the most interesting, and again, I don't know how this will play itself out, but, and then we'll talk about Sunday Red, because that's a whole thing, on one hand, you have a lot of the golf industry, and this is like coming from every corner, people are saying, right? And I think what people say and what people do are two different things, but people are saying that they're tired of all this money talk, right? They're tired of hearing about the purse here. They're tired about hearing about that. Like, how much or whatever. How much did so-and-so get to go sign live? How much did Tiger turn down to not go? Like, everyone says that they're tired of talking about it. And yet, every week in, week out, you know, I'm sure the highest ranking articles and posts that you can see about a tournament are, what was the purse? How much did so-and-so make? First, second, third, fourth, fifth place, et cetera, et cetera. Which I think is very interesting for a community of golfers, and that's everyone, and that's all of us who are part of that community, that, you know, we bitch about, it ain't about the money, stop talking about it. So I found that part interesting, because when you think about other sports, right, basketball, soccer, F1, we know these, and look, and I know the structures are very different, but we know those guys are paid very well for what they do, right? We know that, right? But when was the last time you watched, I don't know, Wimbledon and, you know, Roger Federer wins, or it's Australia Open and Coco Gauff wins, and they're like, okay, Coco Gauff wins the Australian Open and she won $2 million, or LeBron James wins the NBA, you know, he wins a MVP or whatever, and he wins $5 million. Sometimes I think those conversations do kind of like emerge here and there, like you'll see a purse check here. I want to say it was Sloane. Was it Sloane Stephens or was it Coco? This is tennis, where maybe it's Coco. I'm so sorry if I'm wrong. Coco, if I'm wrong. But when she won, did she win at, no, maybe it was Sloane. One of them won at the US Open here in New York. And there's a really funny scene where you get the trophy and they handed her the check. And she opened it, you know, like us, you know, us as kids, when you get that first paycheck, And you crack open the envelope and you see the check, the number, and her eyes got big. She's like, yo, this is crazy. But beyond that, it's like the money has not been a thing, even though it is a thing in other sports. And I find it interesting that like golf in some ways glorifies it, but then is disgusted by it at the same time. So anyways, I don't know. What do you guys think about that?
That is a really interesting concept, because like culturally speaking with like football and basketball, it's always a part of the conversation. So with golf, like everybody knows it's, I guess historically there is always that like country club aspect, and a lot of those people don't necessarily like other people talking about their money. Right. So the idea that it's also like not necessarily, at least from like a cultural level, like people talking about it at that height. So I don't know that. Yeah, I haven't really thought about it like that, but it makes sense. It's just, it's such an odd and a bit of annoying, frustrating, like day-to-day, weekly conversation that's happening.
Yeah. It's very odd, because in some regards, like, okay, there's a tournament happening now. Do I care if the winner wins $1.5 million? Not really. For me, as watching a tournament, that adds no value to the tournament for me. I'm like, oh, did someone win? Or I don't know. Interesting. What do you think, Patrick?
Yeah, it's an interesting concept, right? Like, I think money, when you talk about legacy and we talk about those sorts of things, like money doesn't really come up as part of the conversation, right? I think you talk about MJ, right? Like, arguably the GOAT, right? You don't talk about how much money he's made on and off the court. You just talk about the things that he's done. And I think with golf, it becomes very interesting in that narrative where like money is always part of the conversation. Again, you take it out of golf, like talking with your friends in a workplace or just talking with your friends in general, you're not talking about how much you made that week. Like, that's not part of the conversation. It's part of like the wins and the celebratory moments you had, right? So I think that being ingrained in golf's conversation on a weekly basis, like you said, it becomes tiring because it's not about the money. I mean, to a certain extent, yeah, it is, right? Sure. Like, you're playing the game because you like to play the game. Like, it's not, I'm playing the game because I want to make X amount. It just so happens that's part of the thing, right? Like, you make it to the league, it's you get the contract because of skill, competency, marketability, all those things. So yeah, it's really interesting that that's part of like the top topics that come up weekly and some people want to hear, and I'd like to say the large majority are really tired of it.
Yeah, tired of it. It's so interesting because when you try to compare it to like very basic, like just us regular folk cultural scenarios, if you got paired up with a random guy and you're like, oh, a nice driver, and the first thing that came out of his mouth was like, yeah, I paid $700 for it, you'd be like, first of all, I don't care. I didn't ask you that. And like, why did you bring money of this all of a sudden? Like, that would be strange. I mean, I'd give you another example. You meet some guy at the clubhouse and he's like, yeah, I played here last week. He's like, oh, I played with some boys, whatever. I won $500 off of him. And you would be like, I didn't ask you that. Like, it's such a random and a completely irrelevant thing to throw in. But anyways, so let's talk about Sonny Red for a second. And I don't want to talk about it from the perspective of, what do you think about the clothes and the design? And here's kind of like, and look, you can share your POV on that, but here's why I think that's irrelevant to the conversation, is that I think what we're seeing now is just the beginning of it. And they clearly put this together very quickly, for at least for my POV, to try to launch this thing when Tiger was back on course, which was Genesis, right? So I do think that, you know, sometimes that first sample, sometimes that first prototype, the very first version of Instagram, if you look back to what it was versus what it is now, very different things, very different use cases. But I'd be curious to have each of your takes on, one, what do you think of the impact that Sunday Red may or may not have on the game with Tiger without Nike's involvement? Like, my point is that, like, still having the biggest name in golf, can this brand break through? Because I do think when you look at the state of the golf kind of like clothing landscape, and I saw an interesting, I subscribe to a lot of like you know, newsletters and stuff. And someone did like kind of like an analytical breakdown on the projections and the size of the golf clothing and accessory market over the next 5 to 10 years. And from a business perspective, the market opportunity is massive, right? Just because there's not a lot of players and golf is growing. So you just do the math and you kind of like make the chart and it shows you like, hey, this could be a thing. So like, I see the business opportunity, but then also there's a lot of really cool brands. And, you know, you guys know a lot of these brands. We all wear them. We talk about them that don't have these big, big names, PGA Tour players, et cetera, that are finding relevancy and traction through the quality of their product and then their design. But when you think of someone like a Sunday Red, I think the question stands to be answered. Can a brand be built on the back of just a celebrity? And I'm not saying there isn't a sake of quality, but how do those two things equate? Is it 50-50? Is it 70-30? I mean, I would also ask the question, and I'll kind of like open the floor up, is that has the golf industry given Tiger a little bit of a pass because it's Tiger in terms of like, do we like this thing or not? So anyways, I'll open the floor for conversation.
Ube, you go first.
What's Sunday Red? yeah, a lot to unpack. Let's see. I think in terms of kind of what it means to the game, I think it's pretty epic in terms of talking not about the clothes and the logo, right? Essentially, someone gave the middle finger to someone else. So was it Tiger to Nike, Nike to Tiger, and they want the discontinue of that relationship, right? So I think that breakup is kind of huge, and there was a shift kind of in the world in that space. So I think identifying as that was a huge moment. And then two, someone gave him a handshake to extend his personal brand, which I've said before, he's probably a little bit late to the party as a personal brand. And if he did this back when he was at the top peak of his game, where he had his own personal logo and he wasn't with Nike, would we see it differently? I think we would. I think golfers can be a bit hypocritical at times. If this was the logo when he was with Nike and he was winning all the majors and he was at the top and the peak, I think we would have differing opinions, because winning solves everything, kind of the grander scheme of things. Would there still been feedback on it? Absolutely. But we would have identified him, that logo, what it stood for what it was. I think Sunday Red, again, back with being kind of hypocritical, we like the fact that we see Tiger in Sunday Red because he means he's in contention, he means he's winning, all those things. But now we attach a logo that's different than what we've been accustomed to. Now all of a sudden opinions get aggressive and we don't like it. So I think it's just fun how those kind of opinions and our reactions kind of match. And it's going to be interesting to see whether or not he one wins again. And then two, if he does, like, what are the opinions going to be? Is it going to be something where those that said something kind of catch their foot in their mouth and are like, oh yeah, no, I like it, I'm going to go buy it at wherever? Or is it B, it just doesn't last that long? But then circling back to what you said, I think this is for him from a branding standpoint. And I think for the larger part of the game, it is a message to say that personal brands need to exist in the game of golf. I think we see it in other sports where brands elevate their athletes or other athletes to help tell their story, right? And I think there was no longer a match with him and Nike and Tiger for this to be successful. I think one, he just has to be more relatable. Tiger through his career has been very private. I think he has a yacht or something called like Privacy, where we don't really know who the man is aside from the golf course. And when it comes to brands and personal brands, you need to know what does it mean? Like for the brands that we wear, like a Students, a Metalwood, a Malbon, like when you look at it, you see the logo, you see what it stands for. It's not the fabric, it's not the logo, it's not the stitch count, the polyester, all those things. It's, oh, that's a reflection of this type of lifestyle, this type of movement, these types of people. And with Tiger, we just don't know who he is. He's a guy who hits a golf ball really well. He's been an elite athlete in golf for the longest that we can remember. And we just really don't know what it means from a lifestyle's perspective of what is Sunday Red. So I think it's just going to be interesting. Is it going to be One's only golf, lifestyle activewear, like this country club, old school type of aspect, which are some of the opinions that I've been hearing? Or is it be an attraction of kind of the younger crowd, new to golf? And those are two kind of very differing perspectives on apparel and kind of brand target. And I think, like you said, only time will tell. But I think the really cool part about it is that maybe he just does become more relatable and more human than we've ever seen. We've seen a little bit with him and Charlie, his kind of chuckle sessions at the range, the way that he integrates with college, the way that he's obviously grown the game. But like, how many layers are we going to peel back of the onion and see who Tiger is and kind of learn more about him? And not only through the game, but just what this brand is continuing to build.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's interesting stuff.
No, I love that. That's where my mind goes. Like, who in golf today, if you remove Tiger, has the strongest personal brand? Like, an open question for you two.
Mm. Now, when you say personal brand, the first question that I would ask is, are you saying a brand as someone known for style? A brand as someone known for, because the thing about golfers is that, you know, some golfers are known for being very talented, like a Tiger. Some golfers are known for, you know, their personality, like a Tyrrell Hatton, right? Just like a, you know, guy that just kind of like pours it all out there. Guys that are known for just like being fun and playful. Guys that are at least somewhat have a, you know, a little bit of a resume of known as being like stylish, like Adam. People say he's like a stylish dude. So when you say personality, which one of those things are you referring to, or all of them?
A little bit of all of them. I think it's a mixture of all of them. I'm somebody who like loves hoops and like hoop culture. I would look at like a Devin Booker, a KD, all mm-hmm. these individuals, a LeBron, obviously, of these individuals who have invested in their personal brand, who has extended not only like all those different attributes that you've mentioned, but also have basically like invested in other portfolios of their brand too, like Uninterrupted and Spring Hill Company, and even like Naomi Osaka, what she's done with like her talent agency. I think it's called like Evolve or something like that. Somebody who is extending beyond like their sport and is culturally relevant on a personal branding standpoint.
That's a good question. I mean, because first your brain goes to, okay, the big names, right? And I do think some of that is relevant, where the big names in golf, or at least in men's golf, tend to kind of like create, and I don't know if this happens organically or just happens because they start winning and then they get a big brand and then things start marketing and whatever, and this clouds their judgment. But like, there are different archetypes of types of golfers, right? There is the, like, you are either a Justin Thomas kind of guy, you are a Jordan Spieth kind of guy, you're a Max Homa kind of guy, you're a Tiger, if you will, which is interesting. But I would also say that like those players or those archetypes are only in my mind because of the brands that they've worked with and the image that they've put out there. So, you know, to your point, Patrick, is that it's not just Tiger. We know very little about any of these golfers. We know nothing about them, what they're interested in, their perspective on art, design, culture, like. We have no idea. It's fascinating. So we have, you know, and look, you can say the same thing maybe. Like, okay, let's use LeBron as an example, right? Like, clearly known for style. You know, we see all the stuff of him arriving for games. Like, the man is into fashion. So we know a little bit more, but golf is like, we know zero. Like, Ricky Fowler, take away Puma, and what do you know about Ricky Fowler?
It's wild. Nothing.
He's outdoor sportsman, dirt bikes, and he just right. plays golf for fun. But I mean, even that question, right? Like, I'm sure there's more to him than that. But I think in sure. terms of like personality, like there's more than, oh, he just plays golf and wears orange.
Right.
So I think in like the personality, I think the whole announcement, and it's a whole signifying of something, is you can be more than just kind of the golfer. And I think, again, not in a golf lens, is like when you think of music, right? Like, how does music transcend everything? Like, obviously there's lyrics and tones and just different audio qualities within the sound. But I think what makes music so great is that we get to peel back and understand one, who wrote it and how emotions take place within the song. So you think of like Jay, right? Like obviously he's had a bit of an arc in terms of his music career style and his different corporations that he's been a part of, right? With kind of Rock Aware, now to Rock Nation. He invests in different adult beverages. I think he's done a really good job in the non-sports area of who is he other than a rapper or a musician, right? So how does that happen in sports as well? Steph Curry, I think, has been doing a really good job. He's become more fashionable in recent years. So I don't know who his stylist is, but shout out to his stylist. Like Steph is kind of venturing into that space. And I think part of that style has also been a positive or net positive for Under Armour, right? You think Under Armour, you're like, oh, it's just not Nike or Adidas. But mm-hmm. I think when you think of the athletes that they have, specifically Steph, like, it's now offered a stylistic lens to kind of that brand and product. And I think that's only possible, one, through winning athletes. And then two, making sure those athletes in their kind of natural state are who they are, right? They're in, when they're not dressed up for the game or when the camera's not on, like, is Steph really a personable, stylistic dude that you just want to chill with? I think yes. The other person I think of is like Marshawn Lynch. Like, I think it'd be really cool to kind of hang out with him and just talk, and he'd just be someone just chill to be with. So in terms of like how he's created his brand, like obviously it's a very different audience, but he's, I know him not as a football player, but you know him for other things if you're kind of following kind of along that trajectory.
For sure. Yeah, it's really interesting when you realize that there's very little that we know about these guys outside of them hitting golf balls.
So Tony and Bryson, I think, are probably the closest to somewhat like pulling back the curtain. Like Bryson doing what he's doing on YouTube, and I think Tony exploring like Team Finau and how they're using social media is mm-hmm. interesting enough to at least open up the conversation on how they can evolve from a personal branding standpoint. Because like in my mind, who gets this first State Farm commercial as a golfer? Who's going to be in the first Subway ad as a golfer? Like who's going to break out of the quote unquote golf box? And like you said, Patrick, venture out into other cross-culture categories where the conversation isn't always about golf. It's because we don't know anything about them. So there's no reason for anybody to jump in and ask questions. They're all, everybody's trying to live like this private lifestyle. I think with Tiger, he's somewhat setting what could be a blueprint for how to go about that process with what the Sunday Red brand could end up being, because they had mentioned it's not going to just be about golf. So opening up the lens of like, what does his other aspects of his lifestyle carry? And then how can other people follow along in that blueprint, if you will? I think operationally right now, because he is still very relevant, I think the Sunday Red brand takes over a bunch of different floor space, in retail locations, pro shops and whatnot, just because of his name. And I think from a TaylorMade perspective, because it doesn't have any influence from the TM brand, it's a best case scenario for them where they can show up, remove competitors from the floor space and still have two separate brands. From the perspective of a retail, you still want to have like a diversification of products and logos and whatnot. So you get that with Sunday Red and you get that with TaylorMade. So I think that is going to be really interesting in the next like 2 to 3 years. You're going to see Sunday Red in a high capacity if they disconnect from the D2C like strategy they have now. But yeah, I mean, we'll see the day that he retires, going back to what Patrick mentioned, like, is it going to still be relatable after Tiger retires and the Sunday Red brand lives on? That's going to be a really interesting question to see in the next couple of years.
Yeah, that'll be interesting. I mean, part of me thinks yes, just because, I mean, we're all still wearing Jordans. And, you know, he was basically what Michael Jordan did for basketball, Tiger is clearly done for golf. So that'll be fascinating. But I am curious to see as the brand rolls out. I think they're going to learn a lot and like revise things. Like they were clearly getting roasted from the pictures from the event of like the samples are kind of jank and like logo placements and whatever. Like that's just whatever. Like those things were made very, very quickly and they're going to learn a little bit of grace and collar hate, which is always interesting and contentious. I think that And again, it goes back to golfers just being golfers. Like I was talking to a buddy of mine about the collar, like the Grayson collar, and how, or what golf is calling the Grayson collar, and what actually, it's just a spread collar. It's a collar that's been, like, you walk into your average menswear store in the city and that has dress shirts, and they're going to have, do you want a pointed collar or a spread collar? It's just a different style that look. And Charlie Schaefer, who's a super awesome dude at Grayson, like tapped into that menswear kind of like classic iconic and brought it over. He was definitely one of the pioneers of it. But I do think there's something to be said with golf, not understanding how culture trickles down, and that's not a bad thing. And that's what makes the world interesting. Is that okay? Like this came from classics menswear. Now it's popping up in golf because it just looks good. You look refined. So it'll be interesting to see, you know, if they continue with that and how they play that out. But I'm very curious from a business perspective, because when I think about TaylorMade's massive, right? It's not like they need any more money, right? The business is successful. Tiger doesn't need any more money. Tiger is successful. At a certain point, I mean, at least as a creative, and I think you guys could, you know, understand this as well, is that we do things, you know, to fuel our lives, right? You do things to pay the bills, keep the lights on, to provide for our families, whatever, whatever. And then on the other side of it, we do things that make us happy and give us purpose and give our lives meaning. And at a certain point, I think the question that I have to ask is, what is the end goal for Sunday Red as a brand? Because Tiger's legacy is set. Like, he doesn't need to do anything else. And if you're going to do this, what is the why, right? Like, I don't think he's ever going to make more money off of Sunday Red that he made off of Nike. And I don't think that's a bad thing. But just, it's just the business side of it that I find interesting. So anyways, enough about Tiger. What are you guys into other than golf, out of curiosity?
I mean, for me, I'm a big hooper. I run a lot, work out a lot, but like hoops is my jam. I played college football, but like I always had the aspirations to play college basketball. I'm only 6 foot, so didn't hit the measurables, but like hoop culture, just everything about like that sport in general is something that I'm really passionate about. And then we have like a group of us that play in the mornings 3 days a week, like 5 a.m. The guys are rolling in and like we're actually hooping.
Damn.
Which is really fun. So it's something to like keep the cardio engines going. But yeah, that's something that I've always been really passionate about. And I like to see that some of that design aesthetic relevancy is starting to like enter into the golf space, which is awesome.
Very cool. Patrick, do you play any other sports?
Not in that capacity. enjoy ball. Don't really play anymore. I mean, you tear something, now you're out of golf for a little bit. So there's a little bit of, you know, there's a little bit of balance there. But yeah, interesting point in life, just in terms of kind of raising kind of some new kids. So I think that's been, other than golf, that's where energy and kind of family time have kind of really been leaned in. It's a, they have two, it's a new experience. And just kind of seeing how kind of they grow and just being a part of that. Aside from that, really watching a good movie is kind of the good decompression. Like, I think as a creative, we're very critical of our own work. And to be able to disconnect from our own things and our own thoughts, just to watch someone else's creation, and just see it for what it is. That's kind of been the thing. I think the last good movie I saw was Killers of the Flower Moon. But yeah, I think just kind of watching just a good movie is a good one, just decompression from kind of all of the noise that happened. And sometimes good comes out of it, where you become inspired the way something is shot and the way something looks. But other times it just feels good to consume content that others have created, and you just really don't have any judgment for it. And you don't have to worry about swiping or liking or anything like that.
Yeah, that is actually true, where it's like I can just sit here and enjoy something and not feel like I have to interact with it. It's so funny, like, Now that I work in golf, you know, making content and Instagramming and stuff, it used to be this like just expression of like, I'm just going to do a thing and post a thing or whatever, right? It was just like fun. It was kind of like a mood board or a photo album of my life, if you will. And now that I work in golf, making those things is like being on a golf course. It just, that work part of your brain turns on and you're like, all right, I got to shoot something. I got to make a thing. And sometimes I was playing with some friends the other day and I was like, I'm not bringing a camera. I'm not turning on my phone and I'm just going to be, which is great. And I think that's like a good, it's a good and healthy balance of things, I think, for sure. So let's take a quick break. I'm going to grab some water and maybe a liquid IV just to hydrate my dry ass. You guys going to get a snack or anything? What are we doing? Coffee? Tea?
I mean, what is it? Almost 10 o'clock out here, so I'm coffee.
There we go. All right, we'll be right back, guys. Look, we've all done it. It's a slow Tuesday and your boss is out of town, so you sneak up for a round. But you still want to flex a little bit that you're playing that course before your buddies do. The Fair Game app has you covered. You can set up your round, and when you tee off, all your buddies will know about it. They can even hop in the comments and talk smack while you're playing. Want to post a video of you hitting the purest shot of the round? You can do that too, all without your boss knowing. It'll be our little secret. Fair Game, the app for golfers. All right, we're back. I want to talk a little bit about my favorite question is the genesis moment. Of what kind of like sparked each of you guys to pursue what you're doing in golf, specifically with your platforms. So Patrick, obviously with cinematography, what for you, what was that moment for you to say, hey, I have a different perspective and I want to bring that to golf? And then obviously with Remy, we can talk about just you unpacking this idea of larger golf media and becoming a platform for emerging brands, if you will. But yeah, Patrick, you want to go first?
Yeah, sure. So I think back into kind of what was the moment where we decided to kind of essentially go all into the space. I was working for a tech company, and I was also moonlighting as a creative within that company itself. And there was some transitions that went on, and I think I came at the crossroads of, do we find another career in the same lane that we've been on, that we've been doing for the longest time, really kind of based in the CX environment, or two, do we bridge into another career where we lean more into the creative aspects of brands, and how does that work? And the way that it happened with golf is it kind of came down. I remember I was sitting on the couch, like honestly staring at a ceiling. I was like, what if we just combined creative stuff with golf? Because at the time I was starting golf a little bit more. I dusted the clubs off in a closet and I'm like, screw it. Let's give it a try. Let's have a little bit of a runway and kind of, can we make it happen? So naturally, naturally kind of just introverted until it comes to being on a golf course. I think that's a very safe space of a place that where I kind of see a bit of sanctuary in there where you can kind of just be freeing, and really just didn't have any kind of reins on kind of what was happening. So we tried to marry, can we make a career in this storytelling environment in a space that was at the time really driven by a lot of hype edits and reels and content. So how do we just not look at that stuff and try to create things as we would see it? And that's kind of how it started. And we've been on that ride with kind of the people that kind of we met along the way and the creatives and those that have been very welcoming to one, the vision, and two, the nature of the golf space has been very welcoming as well. So just continuing to try to tell those stories and kind of add a different lens and perspective. And yeah, well, we're just trying to continue to do that. And it's funny thinking back to that moment of, can you do it or can it happen? It's, you get nervous and you're like, oh man, do I really want to go find another job? Cause it's, I don't want to answer emails. Like I'd like doing this thing, but the doing this thing for exposure or doing this thing to do this thing doesn't like support and pay for things. So I think some people would argue like, oh, it's just, Laura, you shoot all these cool things. You make all this stuff. And honestly, you don't see kind of the grind and the stuff that it took to get there. And kind of the grit it takes. And I think when you think of other people making brands, circling back to kind of the Sunday Red thing, is that you got to make a jump, you got to cross the line at some point. And then at that point, you just don't turn back and you just try to make it work until it doesn't work. So thankfully, we're not at the beginning and we're also not at the end. So this is just a very fun middle part of the journey. And it's been quite a ride to be on.
I always like to think about, at least with any kind of like subculture or group of individuals doing a thing, there's always kind of like, there's the creative class, the people on the ground, the people in the streets, the smaller underground people doing a thing that in time grows and affects the mass mainstream. And I think there's something interesting when you think of not just creators in the golf space, but creators in general, and specifically in regards to cinematography and video content, that are actually bringing that more creative, artful, thoughtful, you know, lens to things. I think that the biggest positive that Instagram has brought to the world is this idea of, you know, it's commoditized creativity in a sense where anyone can pick up a phone and be creative and make a thing or make a reel or have a podcast or share their perspective. And in some regards, I find that interesting. But at the same time, when the only thing that separates, you know, everyone, the masses from, you know, I don't know, the only thing that separates, let me do like a basketball comparison. The only thing that separates, you know, us on this podcast who can probably run up and down a court a little bit and, you know, play a decent game from a LeBron is that he's doing it at the highest level, right? And we still have that to look up to. But when it comes to content, I mean, I see it a lot. I'm sure you guys see it too, is that the weight that is put on, you know, fast, cheap content versus things that are like highly thoughtful and curated. It's less of a priority, obviously, because most of the people that are making it don't come from that background but you do. But I'm curious on your perspective. Oh, I'm sorry, this is a long-winded question, but I'm curious on your perspective, not about the regular everyday consumer, about big golf, if you will, where why have they not tapped into, because they have all the resources and could do it very well, why has big golf not tapped into looking for ways to capture golf in a more artful, more cinematic approach with all of the budgets and all of the cameras and all of the editors? Like, why has that not been a list, at least from my perspective, why has that not been a priority?
I think you just don't know what you don't know. You're so accustomed to the way this thing looks. And when I say thing, I just, the way that golf is portrayed and the way that people are traditionally okay with consuming content, right? Like, it's like you talk the fast pace, quick cuts, 30 seconds, it is what it is, right? Like, that structure is, it's proven, it works. But how long does it work for? And is that what your longer lasting brand is going to be? Now there's a time and space for that, 100%. But I think brands could benefit from leaning into something different, right? I think when you think about movies, right back to that, like, there's different genres. Like, I don't watch comedy all the time. You don't watch rom-com, you don't watch action. You need different lenses and different approaches to what people see. Because, I mean, even in this group that we're in right now, like, different experience, different crowds, different upbringings, like, you're not going to get everyone's eyeballs on what you need to. But if you're an end consumer and your end product, you want that piece to be part of it, 100% you should. I think Full Swing has done a pretty good job of doing that in the last season. I'm excited for the next season on how they're doing that. But golf in that lens is a little bit more, has a little bit more cinematography to it from a very longer form, right? There's, I think Scratch does a good job as well. Also Fair Game, one peeling back the onions and lenses of guests that they had in the past. Like, there's a different approach. And if you want to kind of attain that crowd, like, you kind of just got to jump into that water. Also do benefit of it is that type of style, it's longer form. Like, you're going to watch it for longer. Like, you can watch 100 videos of 15 seconds and just be exhausted, right? Mm-hmm. Or you can watch a 2-hour piece on someone and you get to know them a little bit more, and it's shot in a beautiful manner. It contains story, it contains mood, it contains all these things that you really want as a reflection of the game. And it's really isolated on that one character. And then you get to build personality and you get to know more about that person, that golfer, that individual, that sport and all those things. So like it ticks a lot of the boxes. So it's very interesting that it's not a little bit more like mainstream or part of the game. But yeah, it does raise a question. But again, there's a time and a place for it. Like a shot only lasts for a certain amount of seconds, but what led up to that shot, what led up to that moment? Like if that's important to the story and whatever we want to shine the light upon, like that does need to last a little bit longer and be shot in a different manner for different consumers.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting.
I have an interesting theory about this that isn't backed by data science or research or anything, but I think it's like golf is such a technical sport. That's also the output that you get too. Like you look at basketball again, I'll keep referencing it. It is such an artful, like in terms of movement and the way that you like capture the sport too. There's so much art in that. Whereas golf, like for the most part, like it's very consistent and very technical. And I think it is when you want to leave, like Patrick said, when you want to leave that environment, that safe environment, like you have to go all in. There's not like, can we try it a little bit and then resort back to what you've always done? It is just this like mentality around staying within the guide rails, not tapping into like the art form, the substance part of it. It's just doing what you've always done because it's worked for so long. And I think just because the sport has grown so quickly in such a short amount of time, that it hasn't really had like the chance to evolve the way that I think everybody that's coming into the sport for the first time is used to in other areas of life, whether that's fashion, music, whatever, how else is happening in other areas of sport, like hoops and football and stuff. So I don't know. It's just really interesting. I think the technical side of the sport is also extended beyond just the actual sport itself.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I'd be curious to see. And obviously, I think like the bigger outlets in golf are probably, as they always are in any category, they're always like a year or two behind what's happening at the lower level. Like, it's like with Melbourne, like Melbourne is not anything new for any of us. But yet on the big screen, it's like, oh, my God, like Melbourne, big pants. So anyways, but Raymond, with you and Golf Projects, this could be an interesting segue. What was kind of like your moment? What did you see or not see in terms of like the brands that were being talked about? And what did you want to kind of like solve? What problem did you want to solve with Golf Projects?
I mean, I was always really into the tech side of like YouTube. So like a Marques Brownlee, MKBHD, and the way that he's approached the tech industry. And like, obviously like his output is at an elite level. I wanted to be able to take a little bit of that concept and ideas into how I approach content within golf. And so again, going back to like the conversations that I would have on course and a lot of like the group chats that I was in of just taking a lot of that energy and then providing that VO in a social environment. Obviously like I've been on Instagram for a really long time and generally, so I like am very comfortable with that platform. So just again, providing like my perspective on what's happening in the space, because you weren't getting like that context on a brand and product level, really from a social perspective at all. Like you would get your traditional unboxings and product reviews on like the YouTubes of the world, but they are just regurgitating what they're seeing and reading in product descriptions. There was no like taste. There was no perspective from like that lens, I guess. So I think for me, it's just like, can I provide my perspective on what I'm seeing and what I'm interested in? I like to talk about the things that I'm like personally interested in, not necessarily like trying to prop things up as like, this is the best this, or this is how you should go about your approach with whatever said idea or concept. It's just more so of like, here's the things that I'm interested in and why.
Hmm. No, that does make sense. Cause I've always been curious around, and I do love that idea, because some of the most awesome things that exist are because someone started by filling a personal need for themselves. I think it was like, maybe it was Rick Rubin. He said something like, make things for yourself first that you love. And then like people either join in or not, which is fine. But then at least at the minimum, you're happy. But then I've always found it so fascinating, because when I always try to think about golf and then think about outside parallels in terms of media outlets that are on the cutting edge of, you know, said culture. So, you know, we can talk about menswear. So you've got your kind of like tried and true pillars of the menswear media space, if you will. So your GQ, your Esquire are probably like the ones that we all know. And if you picked up a copy of their latest magazine or looked online, you're going to get a combination of stuff. You're going to get the typical basic stuff like, you know, the best men's Popland or the best polo or, you know, five sneakers to check out. And within those, within that curation, you're going to get a combination of widely known, very mass, highly accessible products and brands, but then still put through a lens of taste, right? And then somewhere, and not in every piece that they do, and this is a digital piece or a print piece, but I do think that it's interesting, specifically with menswear, that they have not abandoned this idea of introducing things that might be on the cutting edge or a little out there that are pushing the idea of menswear and fashion forward. And I always think that with golf, it's interesting where the bigger outlets aren't really talking about the smaller brands in golf that are doing interesting things or making cool stuff. Like, you know, if it's like a Manners or a Student or whoever, where I think these brands are cool and they're making great things, but you know, why are they not getting more shine? I've always found that interesting because half of the newer and emerging stuff that I see in golf, I see on golf projects first, which is wild. And I remember even before your channel existed, a lot of the stuff that I would see was just because I would just follow a bunch of brands on Instagram. You have to scroll through and find things in the filter. And I've had friends that would pick up the game and have gotten into it. And it's like, all right, I want to start playing golf, but I want to find like cool shit. What do I wear? And it turns into this like me just sending over 15 bookmarks versus saying like, hey, go to check out this one site or this place here is a great platform to find new shit, because that platform in golf doesn't exist yet, which I've always found so fascinating. I mean, do you think, Raymond, that it is an intentional oversight by larger media outlets, or a lack of interest, or they're just not from that subset, or they don't see golf that way, so they're like, I don't want to write about, you know, this brand because I'm cool rocking XYZ.
Mm-hmm. No, I mean, I think from a traditional lens, like it is a pay to play environment. So a lot of these articles are based off of the fact that they're getting some sort of, I wouldn't say commission, but like affiliate aspect of it. So these writers are making money off of it, and or a lot of these brands are paying to be published in these different mediums. Whereas these tastemaker brands, a lot of the brands that I talk about, some of the younger brands don't have the funds to be able to get in those types of articles and things. So from my standpoint, like I haven't made a dollar on my channel, but to what Patrick was saying earlier of like building a lot of connections and building community, that monetization aspect of it will come, but I'm very patient in it. Mm. So I know that people are getting a lot of what they need, and then there's just a ton of energy in the space. So being a voice for that, I get a lot out of that. It's a lot of fun for me. But I think from the traditional side of stuff, of just like you said, opening up the conversation of what's happening at the lower level, well, at least gain a little bit of notoriety and authority for also what you write at the highest level too. So just being able to like play within those two different sandboxes is important, and it just hasn't happened. Just because, again, going back to what we very first talked about, like it's a business, and like the money kind of like runs the engine. So
sure,
they have to have like that monetization aspect of it.
Yeah, that is interesting. So, but here's the part that I think is very interesting with that is that, and I only know this because two jobs ago, I worked at a magazine. I worked at a site called Gear Patrol. I was the art director there. I made the magazine and did all this stuff. And there is something that's very powerful when you have a media outlet and you are known for your editorial perspective, your taste on style, whatever, whatever. And on the business side, yes, there's a lot of stuff out there that it is pay to play. But at the same time, from an editorial perspective, most of it is not. Like you could go to GQ.com, the New York Times, Gear Patrol, wherever, and you can find stories that most of them are, these outlets, at least from my perspective, they develop their credibility and their reputations on their taste and their sense of curation. And every once in a while, they'll throw in a couple stories that are hashtag sponsored, right? Same thing on Instagram too. But what I found very interesting to your point about pay to play is that there has been this very large shift in media where there are more things that are being paid for that are not, that you wouldn't think are, because brands are like, all right, well, the only way I'm going to get a write-up on this is if I cut a check, which is part of the game. But the part that I think is missing, and again, only because I've worked in this side of the industry before, is that you're supposed to disclose that as an editorial outlet. You're supposed to say, hey, like, you know, we're doing this thing, but like so-and-so's breaking us off, so all good, right? And I think that very weird gray area in not just in golf, but in larger media is becoming so blurred because you can't tell. Like, yes, like there are influencers that we all follow that get paid by brands to talk about and post things, right? Which is fine. It's part of the world that we live in. They are ambassadors and it's cool, right? And they've disclosed that they're ambassadors. But at the same time, there's this very weird gray area where like, am I listening to this person because I believe in their perspective and their taste? Or am I just like, and I did at one point, but now this person is just getting a check and I'm just like absorbing stuff. And I think a little bit of it is fine. Like I've spent, you know, 10 years of my life working in advertising. So I know the game and I love the game. I think the game is cool as long as you're being transparent about it. But I don't know. What do you guys think about that?
That's, I mean, we've lived through like the influencer era. And I think we're like on the cusp of what this new curator era looks like. So using like the Golf Projects channel as an example of just somebody who has really unique, interesting taste that is serving really great product and stories. It's just trying to figure out the monetization aspect of that. And I think leaning on like YouTube does a really great job of paying its creators. Meta is a little bit behind the lens of like what they're trying to do on Instagram and Facebook. So if we can find a medium where the platform makes sense for curators to like actually monetize without it falling on either the brand or the consumer, that's like the best case scenario. I've talked about this a little bit of just like what is the programming like going to be on an Instagram where there's, whether it's through ad revenue or whatnot, just trying to figure out that. That's what I'm trying to be patient about. So it doesn't like those dollars don't land on the consumer and or these brands that I'm talking about.
It's very interesting.
I think it's just transparency. I think when you talk about going back to personal brands, right? Like if you are watching someone that's like trying to sell you like 8 different things, you're like, dog, you don't like any of those things. Like why like you lose a little bit of trust with that person, right? And I think that's what it comes down to. Like, are you going to align with brands that kind of make sense to you and are very authentic and that stuff that you would just rock naturally? Or are you just doing it for the dollar figure? And I think with the internet, like, even though you can, I think the truth eventually comes out, right? I think it becomes very transparent of why you're doing certain things and what you're doing them for. So if you're just trying to kind of sling tummy tea or whatever you're doing, like you understand, like you know you're not using it, you know that it's, you know, now I don't know if I can believe you as much, right? But then if you like, if this person or this thing is consistent and like there's a certain feel and aspect, you're like, okay, well, like that, it makes sense. Like I like it for this because of this person, or I don't like it for this because of that person. And I think with brand, like for brand wise, at least there's eyes on it, but you got to find the right match. Like you can't just start just giving it to folks and just kind of lying through your teeth on the internet. Like I know it's the internet, but like
for sure,
if you want to go a long way, like you got to play the longer game and just not in it for that weekly or monthly check. You know what I'm saying?
It's the number one reason why I am like not on TikTok anymore at all. Ever since like the TikTok shop ecosystem has like came to be whatever it is now, it drives me crazy. You're getting sold shampoo, fingernail, like all kinds of random stuff for 10 cents on the dollar. It's insane. So yeah, I've completely abandoned that because like you said, I don't want to be sold anything. I just want to learn and like discover really cool, interesting stories.
Right. The tummy tea movement, like people don't realize, and I don't know, that was wild. Those were wild times. That probably was the first kind of like product endorsement that just went crazy. And I mean, I don't know anybody that was taking that tummy tea, but I remember that was a time. But I was going to say, connected to that, one of my second to last questions was, what do you love and what do you hate about golf?
I love the romantic aspect to it. I think there's stillness in the game. I think there's escape within the game that you can or you don't get with other things, depending on kind of how you're geared and who you are. I played the game when I was kind of like a teenager. I had aspirations of playing the game at a higher level. And then there was a time where I didn't want to play the game anymore because I lost the drive and understanding of why I wanted to play the game. And it's funny, I mean, it came back. Like I said, there was the clubs were dusted in a corner, and one thing led to another, and you picked it back up and you refound kind of why you played, what it means to the larger part of your life, and how it allows you to escape from other things and see other things through different lenses and connect you with people that you probably would have never connected with. Like I said, I'm naturally an introvert. I'm really quiet. If we saw each other at the bar or kind of out in public, I wouldn't say hi. But on a golf course, yo, what's up, man? How you doing? And I think that is a part of life, and that aspect is that has been really interesting, one for myself. And like, I think that also runs parallels in other people's lives who find the game and who play the game, whether or not that's your kind of whole perspective of it. But I think there's parts and pockets of it that apply to other people. So that's, yeah, why I love the game and continue to play, and why I hope that my kids pick up the game, not to hit a golf ball a certain distance or shoot a certain score, but the kind of connective tissue that you build through the game as kind of its muse. And hate about the game, that there are still walls in the game. Like, there's that certain country club cookie cutter type of box that it's broken and fragmented a little bit, but it's still there. I think with 2024, like, you just see it in the fabric of opinions, right? Like, you can't wear pants that are too baggy, you can't wear hoodies on the golf course. But I think for a game that is so international and worldwide, the lens is super just local. You think of golf and you gotta tuck in your polo, you gotta wear a certain belt, you don't match black with white, don't do these certain things. But then if you travel to other areas outside of golf and culture, like, you see different things. Like, one of the favorite places to visit is like Japan on time. You can go, right? You just see different elements of culture and style a train ride away. And I think for the game, like, we are missing that sort of aspect. Like, you see it in other sports where it's okay to be representing certain things and certain visual looks, but within golf, you have to fit in a box. And like I see, there's different doors and different parts of that box you can live in. And I think the game just needs to open itself a little bit more. Because if we're really arguing about what fabric we're wearing and how we're wearing it, I think the longevity of the game is kind of tough. And then to circle back on one of the notes we were talking about with Sunday Red of, like, does it last longer? When I think of brands in golf that have kind of transcended that space, I think of Arnie. Like, that umbrella logo is going to live forever. It's going to live on the golf course. It's going to live on the drinks that we have outside of the golf course, and what he represented to the game. So I think he is someone who obviously I look up to in terms of how he's built a legacy on and off the golf course. And I hope our other heroes and people and players that we look up to kind of do the same. Because I think he is one that really kind of broke down that door and allowed just these different aspects of people to be part of it. And hopefully the greater good can recognize something like that as we continue to play the game in the future.
For sure. No, I think that's great. Raymond, your turn.
I mean, for me, like I mentioned, I love tech, but like the constant 24/7 input can get absolutely exhausting, whether that's you digesting stuff or you engaging with things. Like, golf to me has always been a true escape, like Patrick was saying, just like to be able to be out in space. Like a lot of my page, I get a lot of DMs on when am I going to start doing the play nine with me type of vibes. And it's just like, I get out there and like, if I'm by myself, a lot of times, like I don't even have music playing,
right?
Like, my phone's on do not disturb. Like it's just the whistling of trees. It's the birds. It's the little chatter that you hear in the background. Like that stuff, it reinvigorates like just the soul of who we are at the end of the day. And then in a group environment, like you're just there with the homies, like catching up, talking all kinds of things. It's just it's a moment, just like you said, just to be able to disconnect is really important for the type of environment that I live within. And the thing that I guess I would hate is it's the only environment where if I'm rolling up to a new course, I always have this like consistent, uncomfortable feeling until I get to the first tee box. So like from parking lot to the first tee box, it's always this little bit of like just uneasy. Is everybody looking at me? It almost feels like I'm getting ready for a job interview, where it's just like, right. I got to make sure that I'm buttoned up and like making sure that I'm proper, ensuring that I'm getting to like that first tee box, and then everything can kind of like relax. So, and then outside of that, it's just like, I would love to see more family oriented aspects of clubhouses and the way that they just approach just having kids. I've always like looked through that lens of how can we make this more of like a family oriented environment, more punch bowls, more coffee shops at clubhouses, just to again grow the sport in a family oriented way is something that I've kind of started tapping into a little bit more.
Dope. It is interesting. People asking you to play a hole with me, that stuff. You know what I think it is? This is one of my like random old man 2 a.m. like thoughts, is that, and I would say that play a hole with me, unboxings, and even maybe just YouTube golf as a whole, is that I think that stuff is super popular because people are getting the experience of like, if I'm playing a hole with you, I'm getting a snackable moment of escape at my desk or at home, right? Or at nighttime. And unboxing, if I'm watching you unbox something, I am getting that sensation of buying a thing and opening up a box in that moment of surprise and delight without having to do any of the work. And you've shot it in this like beautiful, elegant way, and you've shown me all the sexy parts, and you ripped off the tape, and I hear the ASMR. And I think there's something really cool about that, where media has given us this platform to share our experience, share our experiences and commoditize them so we can kind of like all get a taste. But at the same time, certain things need to just be yours. And like, at the end of the day, you just have to, if you want an escape, like go pick up some clubs and go play nine. So it's fascinating when you think about how the things that people are gravitating to, why they love them, and they don't realize they love them because like you're loving something that's so personal, but then the person that's doing the work is doing all the work for you. So anyways, that's a rant for another day. Last question. When and where is your next round of golf?
Shoot, at this point, because it's snowing, it's just going to be right down the road at the Muni. If I can just get out there and just play, it's been so many weeks because this weather has been just absolutely wrecking house out here. So I'm just trying to get out to the local Muni and just swing some sticks.
Love it. Patrick, you live in heaven, so where are you playing?
It's actually been a couple weeks since I played. So yeah, local Muni. I'm a Muni kid. I grew up on dirt, so that's a matter, just some dirt to hit off of, just to kind of feel the sensation of, you know what, I could be great. And then you see the ball fly and you're like, you know what, I'll come back tomorrow.
That's it. Awesome. Well, enjoy the time out there, guys, and thanks for being on the podcast.